Hey, Jake here. This episode was recorded way back in the simpler times of February 2020, back before the world was completely turned upside down. And we know there's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. And so we hope that this podcast can be somewhat of an escape from current events. We don't plan on really getting into what's happening currently day to day in this podcast, but we just want to focus on creativity and help you to focus on your creativity. And with that, we understand that many of you, you're finding yourselves without a commute, with less meetings, and in some cases with just less work to do. And so we invite you to invest your extra time into improving your artistic abilities and trying to level up. During the plague, Isaac Newton worked towards theories of gravity. He came up with new theories and new understandings of optics as well. And Shakespeare, while he was stuck in quarantine, he wrote King Lear. So I'm betting that you, while you're stuck, you can learn how to draw a head from different angles or how to get better at your line work or something like that. So we just want you to turn off Netflix, put your phone on Do Not Disturb for a couple hours every day, and work on improving your craft. And to help you out with that, svslearn.com is offering our subscription free for 30 days, a 30-day trial for our podcast listeners. We want to give you immediate access to our foundations path with all the new classes that are going to be coming into that. We have 80 other courses that you'll have immediate access to as well. And you could sign up for that right now at svslearn.com. There's a link in our show notes as well. Last week for our subscribers, Will did an online live event over the course of 3 days where he painted a drawing from start to finish while he was fielding questions from our subscribers. And we have more courses and more events like that lined up for the next several weeks and months to give people something to do and to help people to take advantage of this situation that we find ourselves in. So really now is the best time to become a subscriber. Also, in this episode, Will and I both mentioned our Kickstarters. I launched mine a day before things really started to go south, and the pandemic has had a measurable impact on the campaign that I'm doing compared to other Kickstarter campaigns that I've done in the past. And Will, he saw that, and he decided to hold off on launching his Kickstarter. He wanted to wait until things settle down and we find a new equilibrium before he launches his. My Kickstarter actually ends in a couple days. So if you do want to support that, the link is on my website at mrjakeparker.com. Lastly, no matter who you are or what you do, this virus has probably affected you to some degree. At the very least, it's dominating your conversations and thoughts. On the other end of the spectrum, you or people in your family are dealing with the health crisis head on. If that's your current situation, our hearts go out to you. But to everyone, we hope for health, peace of mind, and success in your current and future endeavors. And with that, let's start this episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've been working for about the last 25 years for all the major publishers in the business. We've published somewhere around 100 books, and we've all taught illustration at the university.
Each week, we come at you with a different topic. Sometimes we're going to argue, sometimes we'll agree, but every time you're going to learn something brand new.
Sounds good. All right, guys, here we are, another episode. And before we get into what we're talking about today, just I want a quick update on where you guys are at with your projects. Will, this episode is airing at the beginning of April. How are things going with your Kickstarter?
My Kickstarter is firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's firing on all cylinders.
Wait, is it up?
Well, no, but we're recording this before.
Okay. I just like thought to myself, oh my God, I missed the whole thing. I haven't funded it.
On the uptake there.
Sorry.
But it is a Kickstarter that I think everybody listening to this would be interested in because it, well...
So what if they haven't backed it yet? What are they doing? They're going to go to Kickstarter and search for Will Terry.
Sure. Will Terry.
What, and what's the, can you talk about the book? Or, I mean, if it's, if it's live right now, you can talk about it.
If it's live, hopefully it's live right now. It's, the book is called What They Don't Teach in Art School. And it's an illustrator's guide to making money in the real world.
So this is the thing you've been teasing for like 20 episodes, right?
I have.
And it's actually happening now.
It's actually happening. It's actually live right now. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's pretty fun.
How long is the book? Do you, is it all completely written and everything like that? Is it like
it's done? It's
multi-chapter.
It's like 33,000 words. Yeah, multi-chapters. It's edited. Paid good money for an editor to edit it.
So give us like, tell us what some of the chapters are. What are some of the things they're not teaching in art school?
I am on the spot.
This is a whole ad for that Will's getting for free.
I'm just curious. You're going to need to pay our sponsor.
Well, I'd have to bring it up to get the actual names of the chapters, but it basically talks about it. There's a big section in there on professional practices. There's a sections in there on developing your own brand. There's sections in there on working with agents and editors and art directors. There's advice. Basically, it's all the advice I've ever given on my YouTube channel and more, compiled into one book with special call-out features from 12 highly professional illustrators. I included you guys in there.
Oh, who is this book good for? Is it good for beginners, intermediate, pros, everybody?
This is the book that I wanted when I graduated art school. Well,
love
I
that.
Didn't graduate, but I almost graduated. When I almost graduated art school, this is the book that I would have wanted and the information that I was looking for and couldn't find. And I was bugging all these professional artists and saying, hey, can I come over to your studio and ask you questions? And a lot of them didn't even have answers for the questions that I had. But I would get little bits and pieces and I kind of put it together. But then over the next 30
stay close to the mic. You're getting a little mumbly.
Okay. For 30 years, I've been developing this, and this is the guide. This is the playbook I wish I had when I started out. And it's always been a passion of mine to talk business. So whenever I would have a class at the university, an art class, I would always mix in. I'd say, okay, today we're not talking about making art. We're talking about selling art. What are you going to do when you get out of school?
Yeah.
And I would have these talks with them, and I would get students saying that was the best talk I've ever had the whole time I've been in school was that one time where you just talked business and talk, because again, kind of gave me a game plan of what to do when I got out of school.
That's so funny that you taught that class, because I also taught that same class, and I wonder if that's how we all ended up sort of together, because
yeah, probably.
Well, cool. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Cool. Lee, what about you?
I've got some pretty big news. I am opening a commercial retail space that's going to be an art gallery, and it's going to be the first art gallery / workspace that benefits the artist. It's not going to be where I take a bunch of money from everybody and the artist gets a little bit. That's what bothers me about galleries. And, you know, as I do more gallery work, I realize that the business model is just terrible. And so I wanted a business model that favored the illustrator. And so I got a great space in a commercial, kind of an indoor, it was an old stove factory, and it's going to be, it got converted and now it's boutique and, you know, high end restaurants, and has a ton of people there, and it's got farmers markets there in the summer that they're outside. And so there's just a ton of people there. And so I am leasing this giant space, and I made it. I think it was 8 pods, and I'm renting each pod to an individual artist, and they keep all the money.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
what amazing artists are going to be in your space?
There's one guy you might have heard of. His name's Will Terry. Will Terry is renting a spot at my gallery, but it's exciting because, I mean, it's a little bit of a risk. I mean, I'm the one on the lease, and it's big space and it's expensive. But I just get tired of everything, the artist getting the little amount, and I just wanted a space where you come in, it's going to be a little bit of money for the artist monthly, and that should hopefully cover my lease costs, and then everybody makes if you sell something, you get to keep it. That's
awesome.
That's the way I think it should work.
That's so cool. So it's kind of like a never-ending art show or convention.
Right.
Yeah. And you just set up your booth.
Right.
And you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically a reaction against normal galleries, where mm-hmm. either the gallery chooses what the artist shows, or you know, for those of us who do art fairs and comic cons and things like that, they're profitable, but you got to lug all your stuff there, and it's only up for 3 days. So this is kind of like a permanent art fair, I guess, or a permanent art show where you control what goes on the wall. It's your rent. You own the space, and we're just all together. And so I'm hoping that the group, you know, builds on itself, like the mm-hmm. It's bigger than its parts, I guess.
Yeah, it's greater than the sum.
Yeah.
Of its parts. That,
there we
that,
go. That's what I was looking for.
That's cool.
Exciting.
All right. Well, for me, I also have a Kickstarter going.
We're some entrepreneurial dudes, if you guys haven't figured it out.
this is for Drawings 5. Last Drawings book came out in 2017 or 2018. I should really look at it. It's been a while. And I just kind of took a break doing Drawings books to do Skyheart. And now I'm back. I've got... I'm sort of re-envisioning, relaunching what I want to do with a drawings book. So before, they're just raw scans from my sketchbooks, just compiled in a book. So it was basically like flipping through a sketchbook. I always thought that was cool, but I want to do a little bit more with them now. And so this book has a comic story in it. So it has some storytelling in it. It is divided into specific sections. So you could flip to like the machinery section. You could flip to the creature section or the character design section. And then there's also a tutorial in there that teaches you basically my method of sketching and drawing. So it's should be like just a nice resource for artists to get inspiration, to learn how to get better, and also just to be entertained.
Will there ever not be another drawings book?
I think I'm going to make them until I die. And I'm think I'm going to, they're just going to be a creative outlet. I love making books. This is going to be, I don't know how many self-published project books I've done over the years. And every time I learn something new, I try to push the creative envelope a little bit with what I'm trying to do. And I like purchasing art books. I like reading art books. I just want to, this is sort of my contribution to the art book world. And I just want these to be like a way for me to just have a creative outlet where there's no oversight. It's just what I think would be cool, what people who like my stuff think would be cool, and me making something for me, but also them as well.
Have you thought about, have you done a box set or thought about a box set maybe?
I've thought about it. That's the thing too. It's like, the sales definitely slow down after a little while for these drawings books. You sell a bunch at the beginning, but then this is a long tail of like sales where, you know, it used to be you'd sell, you know, when the book first comes out, you're selling hundreds or thousands of them. And now it's, you know, one or two a week you're selling them. But eventually they do sell out, and then people always say, oh, I missed it. Are you going to reprint it? But I can't justify a reprinting if it's only going to be selling
trickling.
One or two a week. Right. So if I were to do a box set, I'd have to do a reprint of, drawings 2 and drawings 3, 'cause those are sold out. And, you know, that's several thousand dollars I'd have to invest in those to make, you know, to make a full set. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know if the demand is there on top of what, you know, maybe that's another Kickstarter. Maybe if this Kickstarter does really well and I have some surplus, I can go in and print some extra copies. I'm open to it, but I think my solution that I've really settled on is doing an omnibus. So it's the big drawings book, and it collects drawings 1 through 4, and it's just a big like 400 page phone book. Mm-hmm. and then drawings 5, 6, and 7 are going to be, maybe 6, 7, and 8 are going to be this new format where I do the stories, I do the tutorials, and then I do not only sketches, but more finished artwork as well.
Can I buy a lifetime membership to drawings books?
That is a great question. How much would you be willing to pay for a lifetime?
How long do you plan on living and creating drawings books?
I think by the time I die, we'll have done drawings 40.
Yeah, but there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee what's happening. So.
No, but you're investing in Jake Parker. You believe in him. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a risk, mm-hmm. but let's see. I could probably do it for, $200. That's a little low for a lifetime membership.
$210.
Basically, for $210, you're getting 35 books.
That seems like a good deal. Next.
But I'm investing early, so I should get a discount.
Let's pin this and
let's move forward.
Discuss this later.
Okay.
I like talking about this kind of stuff though, because this is shop talk. This is like what we talk about when we're not recording. And so I don't know, I just like you guys to have a little bit of a behind the scenes.
I do think it's interesting, just to recap what I was talking about a second. I was sort of joking with Will, but it is interesting that all three of us are published illustrators and that we had typically make our living from client-based stuff. And we've all slowly started to shift to where we're taking the reins and we're gambling. We're having to invest money to make these things, whether it's a gallery or a book or whatever, a series of books. But we're all basically taking the leap and saying, hey, I want to create my own content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was a question. I mean, I was just talking about that with Allison, my wife, just this morning, where she's paying bills and she's looking at the account and she's like, okay, hey, so what's coming in next? Like, what kind of jobs are you getting? And I have zero client work right now.
No.
There's two job offers. People who are wanting to know if I'm available for freelance work. But when I look at what they're going to pay versus the time and the effort that I need to put into this Kickstarter and what the Kickstarter is going to pay, the Kickstarter is riskier because who knows if it's going to do well or not. But every one of my Kickstarters has been successful, mm-hmm. and has ended up netting me more money than the work and effort that I would have gone and put into freelance. Plus, that's just the Kickstarter itself. Plus, then I have stock for my shop that I can sell over the next year. Once a freelance job is done, I don't see any more money from that, mm-hmm. you know, years down the road.
There's something really sexy about working on your own stuff too. Being, mm-hmm. you know,
I think there's different personalities too that it favors. I mean, I think all three of us, or I can only speak for myself, but it seems like you guys are cut from the same cloth where when I'm like Jake, I'm wrapping up my last project right now, but when I don't have client work, I am way more prolific than even when I have client work. Like when I have nothing scheduled, I make so much work.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing too, I started my Patreon. I've always had a Patreon. Like this last year I've been doing that and it was project based. So if you wanted to support Skyheart, you came to the Patreon and you supported Skyheart, but I shifted it this year to just support Jake and you're just going to get basically behind the scenes stuff of all these personal projects that I'm doing. So if I make a YouTube video, you're going to get the notes for my YouTube video before I ever post the video. If I design a character, you're going to get a video of, of me explaining the drawing of, you know, the design that went into it, or you're just going to get a PSD file, just a straight up PSD file that you could pick apart and look at, oh, here's what he did on this layer. Here's what he did on that layer. And I've seen so much more growth with the Patreon for that, just supporting Jake, making his own stuff, not project based. It's just Jake based, that it makes me feel dumb that I haven't like done this sooner.
But there's no business. I mean, you got to find it. You don't know really how it's going to go. You know what I mean? So you're kind of finding your way in the dark, sort of.
Yeah, that's true. I like the analogy, like you can only see as far as your headlights down the road, you know, as far as the headlights will show you. But you can get all the way to your destination that way. You know, you don't need the whole map. And so that's what I'm doing now. It's like, between the Patreon, between the other personal projects. It's working, and it's taken me years to get to this point. For several years, it was live or die by client work, and especially early on in my career, knowing how to best to like navigate those jobs was important, because it made a difference of, you know, if I'm getting taken advantage of, or if I'm getting actual, like, the amount of money that I should get. Let me ask you guys, what were some of your first, very first client jobs?
Are we getting into the episode now, or is this?
Did you like that transition?
Wow, it's so smooth. I needed to
that we had
adjust
to,
my
we had
thinking.
To ruin it by drawing attention to it.
Sorry, yep. I'm not used to the smoothness yet. I prefer us saying, okay, listen, let's get started now. All that was just banter. Now
you're dealing with a professional podcaster here.
Wow.
I can tell your Patreon skills have rocketed you into professional world. Me and Will are just amateurs back here. All right. So what was some of our first client work?
Yeah, very first client work. You've talked a little bit about it before. I know you did some mural stuff. Will, you jumped right into illustration work, mm-hmm. out of college. But what were these first jobs? Were they like super like awesome? You know, yeah, I can't believe this is the kind of stuff I'm doing. Or was it like, ooh, I just need work?
I think it was interesting because it was a real combo of exactly those two things. When I was first getting out, as I was transitioning from school to pro stuff, and decided I didn't want to do entertainment stuff because I'd already started getting a little bit of work there. But when I decided just pure illustration stuff, I remember I got the job to do an ad for a dentist, and I had to draw a tooth holding a toothbrush riding a motorcycle. And it was awful. It was just, I mean, there's no possible way it could be good. At the same time, I'd sent out a bunch of postcards to New York, and I was trying to get work as an illustrator doing books. But the first thing that actually hit, I got a call from National Geographic and did an illustration for National Geographic. And so that was just, it's so funny because at the same time I'm working on this tooth and then a National Geographic full page illustration. It's just awesome. So goofy.
Right. What about you, Will?
I jumped right into doing editorial work. So I was working for newspapers and magazines and a lot of obscure magazines.
You weren't doing like Time, the cover of Time.
One of the first ones I got was Money Magazine, which was by Time at the time, and Psychology Today. So I got really lucky early on. I don't know if lucky is the right term, but I mean, I got some high profile magazines. Mm-hmm. And then found that the bulk of the work was coming from obscure magazines like Hospice Magazine. You know what a hospice is? Where, you know, they come to, like, when you're about ready to die, you go into hospice mm-hmm. care.
Who reads that magazine?
Hospice directors. Directors of hospices. And then the circulation was only, you know, 20,000. But they paid. You know, $600-$800 for a cover. And, but the thing is, one of the things you were talking about or asking about, I think, was, you know, was it really good work or how did you feel? And I think, you know, I've really thought about this, that you go through different phases in your career as an illustrator. And one of them is, I don't care what I'm drawing. I don't care if it's a tooth riding a motorcycle or something. What was yours? Lee?
Tooth with the toothbrush.
Tooth holding the toothbrush, riding the motorcycle.
You just want to, instead of working as a cashier or hanging drywall, which is what I was doing, you just want to sit at a desk and get paid to draw something. That's where my mind was. And and if someone was going to pay me to draw something, I didn't care what it was. Mm-hmm. But what's funny about the human spirit is, and I think it's a really good thing. I think it's why civilization is advanced as to the point that it is we're not content. We're typically people are just never content. We always want more.
Right.
And so you do that, you draw the tooth riding a motorcycle for a year and you start wanting to do something more fun than that. You
know,
you
want to, there's got to be more than this.
There's got to be more than this. So I was doing editorial, and doing, a lot of little business people with a big, that was like a big thing back in the early 90s, was little, mm-hmm. little people in white shirts and ties and women in business suits. And they're tiny with big objects. And that was the formula that I guess Brad Holland kind of popularized. Mm-hmm. And so if people couldn't afford to get a Brad Holland, so they might, you know, sacrifice and try to get Will Terry to do an illustration, you know? And I did hundreds and hundreds of those, for magazines all over the country. And that's what put food on the table. For
did you ever years. Do, this is just a side question, but did you ever do stock? Because I remember, if you guys aren't familiar with stock, that's where you would give your images to an agency and then they would just be a catalog that clients could look through and say, oh, I want this illustration that's already done. And they'd pay a certain amount, $250, $500 for it. Mm-hmm. And it's not so big anymore. I don't think. Mm-mm. I don't see.
I actually saw, this was so interesting. Again, this is a tangent, but I saw a guy who's a concept artist, and on his website, he had basically sketches from his sketchbook, a bunch of different character designs, vehicle designs, whatever, that he just did for fun. And he said, any of these are available for license or just straight up buying for any one of your video game projects, film projects, comic books, whatever. You could just buy this concept design and that is your character that you're going to use for whatever it is you want to use.
That's genius.
That's really smart.
Yeah. For somebody who's doing concept and then producing a ton of that kind of work, that is a genius idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I got contacted by Neil Blomkamp's assistant once, and she had sent me and you know who he is, he did District 9 and mm-hmm. Elysium and all that stuff. His assistant, she contacted, or producer, I forget how they're affiliated, but they emailed me a robot that I had designed, and they said, hey, we'd like to use this design for our film. Can we just buy this straight up from you? And ultimately, I had already designed it for another film, for just like an indie project. And I told them, listen, it's kind of already for something, but I'm happy to do concept work for you guys. And they're like, oh, thanks for letting us know. We actually don't want to hire you for concept. Thank you anyway. We'll see you. So that kind of fell through. But the reason I bring this up, these early jobs, and my early jobs were like, I wasn't a good enough illustrator that people wanted to hire me for illustration. So I was getting hired to do, like business card designs. I designed websites, just like the actual like graphic design of it. I did a lot of graphic design work early on. I think that's why I kind of enjoy it and do it okay now, because I was doing a lot of it early on. But and then other early jobs were like, you know, can you do this more technical, we just need an image of a skeleton from this photograph. It just needs to be large, you know, like basically blow it up. And that was before you could like print something large. It had to be painted large. And so I was just doing like this stuff. And it's the same thing like you were saying, Will, it was, I don't care what I'm drawing. I'm actually just getting paid to draw, and this is cool. T-shirt designs too. I would do those. Those were actually kind of fun. But the reason I bring this up and what I want to get into specifics today is you're new to illustration, to getting work, whether it's illustration or design or anything. How do you navigate these first jobs where you kind of don't know what to ask? You don't know what you can leverage. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to negotiate a little bit. And once you get the job, how do you actually deliver so that you are professional about it? Mm-hmm. So first things first, the landscape has changed since we've been new illustrators. And so the kinds of jobs that you could get today, you get an email or you get a DM, someone's going to ask you to do something like a t-shirt design. Someone could ask you to design a button or a pin for them. I have a person I know who was contacted about someone designing jewelry for them. This person sells jewelry and they're just looking for artists to like design cool jewelry designs that they then go manufacture and sell. Somebody who has a podcast might need an illustration for their podcast, like what we do. We hire on our SVS students all the time to do podcast illustrations for us. A lot of times you get asked by usually independent publishers or self-publishers. They need illustration for a book cover, or they need illustrations for a book. Fan art commissions are a big one that a lot of times that's one of the first job paying gigs that you'll get is some sort of fan art commission. I know of people who've gotten jobs designing figurines or miniatures for these smaller, you know, someone has a 3D printer and they need designs, they need something to get going, and so they're looking for artists to do that. Lots of web apps out there, and those all need artists, and they're always looking for people to do concept art or like, you know, there's so many apps, games that involve jewels. They need jewel artists, you know, things like that. I get asked, and I've gotten asked, like, I've got this new startup that we're working on, and we need a logo for the startup, or we need a character mascot for our startup. That's another thing. So those are just some examples. So let's say you get an email or a DM, and someone says, "Hey, I need you to do a design for me. Are you available? And what is your rate?" What do you guys say to that? What is the answer?
Go to Kickstarter and get my book.
Nice. Not as
give
subtle.
Give us a little teaser of that chapter in your book, Will.
Yeah. So you're basically, what you want is information, because mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's heard information is power. It really is. And you can't negotiate from a place of ignorance, or you can negotiate poorly from a place of ignorance. So you need to know things like, you need to know what their deadline is, what the time frame is that they're asking for. If they're asking for something that is impossible, that's going to really dictate the negotiation right from the beginning. If they need it tomorrow and you absolutely can't do it by tomorrow or in 2 or 3 days, then it's not going to work. You need to know what the biggest mistake I think illustrators make is they don't find out enough about the job as far as like the complexity. If someone said, you know, then clients are notorious for this. They want to hire you to do one illustration. That's meaningless. One illustration mm-hmm. could be an illustration of a hammer, you know, or a mm-hmm. fire hydrant, which could take you an hour or two.
Or it could be a toy shop with scene. 50.
Yeah, it could be a battle scene in the Civil War or something, you know. And so when clients tell me the page count, well, they want you to illustrate a book, here's what it pays and all, I don't care about. The pay means that the actual dollar amount means nothing if it's super complex. And it also, likewise, I've had jobs where, you know, I did 70 little tiny spot illustrations for, I think it was like 10,000, right around $10,000. But, you know, and I wanted to know how complex they were, and they were super simple. You know, it was 70 illustrations. It was a lot of work, but it was a hammer, a flower, a fire hydrant.
Individual items.
Yeah, it was individual mm-hmm. items for a learning card game that they were going to mm-hmm. print those on. And it was so easy. It was really good money for, you know, for the complexity. So you have to find out. And if they don't know, sometimes they're not even finished with the description. They're still mm-hmm. working on the project, and they're like, "Well, we'll let you mm-hmm. know." I'm like, If it's really complex, you're like, "Can you give me an estimate? Is it characters interacting with each other? Is it based on one character? Is it an animal mm-hmm. versus a person? Are we dealing with multiple ethnicities and genders and things like that? Because if we are, that complicates things." Mm-hmm. You know, that everything is going to, your time is what you're selling, and you need to know how much time you're selling. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the main things that I talk about in the book.
Lee, do you have something to add to that?
I do. I got my little list of things. I was just getting ready to type it out. I should have done it while Will's going through his long, boring explanation thing. hold on. Let me just write this down real quick. So I got a few things.
While he's scrambling.
I'm not, I don't scramble.
I put a whole section in. I know this is a big pitch, but it really is. It's like my life's work. This took 30 years, so I'm really excited about it. And I have a whole section in there on how to price your work, if you have no idea what they have, how to try to get the maximum amount out of them without, you know, feeling like a jerk, but coming up with a reasonable way of finding out what their budget is. You really want to know as much about it as possible, and having questions ready to ask. Now, the neat thing now is that the beginning illustrators now don't have to get on the phone. That was nerve-wracking when we were coming up.
Right.
It was a phone call, and if you didn't, you know, if you weren't good at communication, I was always really nervous in the early days. I'm talking to somebody in New York City, and they're telling me about a job, and I mean, I would freeze up. And then I get off the phone and go, well, I didn't find out this, that, and the other. You know, one time I didn't even write down the client's name. And they're like, well, we'll put it all in the fax. And for those who don't know what a fax machine is, for about 5 years, for about 2 minutes, we were using fax machines. And they said, well, we'll put it all in the fax. Well, the fax never came through. And they had given me a deadline for sketches.
Right.
And so I'm waiting for them to call me. And they're waiting for me to send sketches on the deadline. And when they finally called, they waited 2 days after the sketch deadline going, hey, where's the sketches? And I'm trying to explain to them, your fax never came through. And the woman that I was dealing with just kind of basically blew a gasket because she was not prepared for that. You know, like they, you know, it was a Friday and she queued up a fax and left and just said, and just left it to technology to get there and it never came through.
Right. That full story, I think, is in our nightmare jobs episode. I forget what it's called. Well, Lee, you ready? You got your.
I'm ready. I just have four things right here. I feel like there's one extra thing which I'll think of, and I'm sure.
I have a list too, so I'll fill in whatever gaps.
There's no gaps. But okay, so when you email back, you get the query email, you email back, you're going to need these four things for sure, and then maybe one thing that Jake adds. Which is going to be
the details
of the job, which is how many illustrations, level of detail, and sizes. Those are the three main things I think that come from that. The dates is number two. Mm-hmm. You're going to need the dates, not only just of when it's due, but when all phases are due. When's the sketches due? When's the final due? And sometimes you can work backwards from that final due date. The rights, that's a big one that you want to get established right away, is who's going to own the illustration, if they're asking for all rights or minimal rights, or you keep the rights and it's just a single use illustration. When you ask these questions, I think you sound smart. Some new illustrators worry that they're going to sound demanding if they put this stuff in there. I think it makes you sound smart because it means you know your business. Your client knows all of these things, by the way. This isn't new information to the clients. So don't be, you know, bashful when you're asking for this stuff. So who's going to own it, the rights, and then the amount of pay, and how it's paid. So those are the four things that if all four of those aren't there, you can't accept the job yet. If they say, we don't know how many, if they say, we don't know how complicated it's going to be, like Will was saying, if we don't know the dates, we're still working out the rights. That means you say, hey, get back to me when you figure that out. You cannot quote on that if it's not not settled. And then the last thing I'll say is, like, in terms of the amount of pay, if it's a new client and depending on how much it is, if it's a huge job, get something up front. Establish the, like for books, it's typically you're paid three times. Once the advance right when you sign the contract, once after sketches, and once after the job is done. And there's all kinds of different variations of that, but that's a pretty standard one. I had students in my class when I was running the senior portfolio class, they get a job with a game company and that would want some assets, and they would just start working, and they'd agree on some hazy amount of pay and hazy mm-hmm. amount of detail, and then they get this unending amount of work. It would be, you know, mm-hmm. 50 characters and 10 environments and all that. And so they've done like months of work and they never got paid. There's mm-hmm. no schedule mm-hmm. for payment. And then the company mm-hmm. goes out of business or fails to launch. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, what can I do? Well, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Right. No, I think that's good. So basically your response needs to be in a nutshell. You need to know what the timeline is for it. You need to know the scope, and the scope is everything we talked about. It's like how many illustrations, how big, how detailed.
How you're going to send the artwork.
Yeah. So then that would be the needs, their specific needs, like how are they, what are you going to deliver and how are you going to deliver it? So do they want PSD files or do they want JPEGs? Do they need high res? Does that not matter? So those are all the specific needs. You're going to want creative direction. So you can just ask specifically, like, what kind of creative direction? And then I think the last thing is ask them what their budget is. Because oftentimes they're going to be like, well, what do you charge?
Right.
And I would say just turn it right back around and say, you know, let me know what your budget is, and I will see what I can do that can work with your budget. Mm-hmm. And that way you know that, you know, they're either going to tell you exactly what their budget is or they're going to lowball you. And if they lowball you or they tell you what, you just tell them what you're comfortable doing with that amount of money. And then they could decide if they need to pay you more or not based on what you're going to be able to give them. So you'll say, okay, what you're asking for in this amount of money, you know, I can actually do half of what you're asking for. And with that amount of time, you know, that's really what I could realistically get done. If you give me more time or if you give me a little more creative direction or whatever, then, you know, then maybe we can negotiate a little bit with that money side of things. But basically just you have a conversation with them, and it might take two or three emails to kind of iron this out before you start working. And Lee's advice there too is also, I need half up front. Just we'll do half up front, and then when I deliver, we'll do the other half. And that means you don't fall into that problem where they're going to, you know, not be able to pay you mm-hmm. after you've done all that work. Also too, like the rights thing, also ask like, what's, you know, is there an NDA? Is this something that I can't put in my portfolio ever? Or is there a time when I can be able to put this in my portfolio? Cause again, you don't want to, you know, you want to have the work that you do be able to be seen so you can get more work as well. So, so I would ask about that. All right. So that is phase one. Now everything's good. You're good. You feel good about the money. You feel good about the timeline. What do you send them in the first round? That first email back to them with your artwork, what does that look like?
I don't know if it'd be interesting at all, but I'm just thinking about this job that I'm working on right now. Do you guys remember this novel that I'm working on and the little bit of trouble I got into on the front end of trying to figure out how many sketches? Can mm-hmm. I do, should I, I'll just go ahead and tell you guys quickly the story. Just of stuff. It seems like those four things, details, dates, rights, and amount of pay, is a straightforward kind of thing. But here's what happened in the last job that I'm doing, or the current job that I'm doing right now. I'd done a previous book. We negotiated for 24 illustrations. There are spot illustrations and some full page illustrations throughout the book, black and white. And then they gave me the size. That's how the first job went. But I liked this book so much that I went ahead and did 25 or so extra illustrations. There ended up being 55 total illustrations, but I was only contracted to do 24, and I gladly did that. I had no idea there was going to be a second book coming. So we negotiate the rate for the second book. It says the same amount of illustrations, 24 illustrations. And once we started going back and forth with the client, it was just so confusing on what do we do? Do I match the last book and go ahead and include 25 illustrations for free? I didn't feel comfortable doing that. So it was like 2 weeks of very awkward emails going back and forth. And how many illustrations are we doing? Hey, I'll be happy to do 50, but you're going to have to up the pay if you want that many, because I'm not going to do these for free. And so that's just an example of some kind of things that can happen. But don't undervalue your work, or what can happen a lot of times is you agree to do 24 and then the scope of the job changes. And if that changes along the way, I mean, I know we're going to get into the process of how to work, you know, once the job's already going, but just watch out for project creep, because it'll go from 24 illustrations to 50, but you haven't renegotiated your contract. And all of a sudden, clients like free work, just like everybody likes free stuff. So you got to be careful.
You fell into the classic passionate artist trap.
Yeah. And I didn't mind it. It was a single,
it
was a single job and I didn't mind it. I was glad to do the work. But then when the second book came around, we had to put the brakes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're sending your first pass. What are you actually, what are you giving them? You know, what's the level of detail that you're giving them? Are you sending them finished stuff? Are you sending them, you know, sort of like a rough version of it? What do you guys usually do? I mean, how do you organize it?
I think I talked about
how do you make it so that
in the last podcast or the one before that, where I've gotten to a point where I like to save time by sending something super rough, just to see if I'm thinking the same way that the art director is, or just to clear, like, hey, I want to go down this road over here. Is that even close to what you're thinking of? And so I will tell my art director, hey, I don't want you to show this in any meetings or anything, but here's some quick scribble sketches. And I'm talking scribble. When I say that, there's no polish to them at all. You can barely tell what's going on. They're little thumbnails. They're just, this is what I'm thinking visually. And they're horrible, but you can tell what's going on. And usually my art directors are like really excited to get that, because they don't want me wasting time sending them finished sketches that are nothing like what they're hoping for.
Right. And let me just be clear here that what Will's talking about is not waiting till the sketch due date.
That's right.
And sending these little things. So I think it's important. What he's bringing up is kind of this back and forth. It's almost like a conversation you're having with the art director before your actual sketch due date. So say the sketch due date's in 2 weeks. Will may send this. I do the exact same thing now too. And I was really scared to do this early in my career, because I thought, like, once they say, okay, job's yours, I sort of had to deliver this perfect thing and just cross my fingers. And it was just real nervy and I was anxious and all that. But now I realize they do like to have this interaction. So I do the same thing. I'll send a quick email that says, even has reference photos and other things, like, is this sort of like what the house that's the story in the story is looks like? And is this kind of what your picture in this junkyard looks like, if that's part of the story? And then I don't waste any time drawing anything. And we get this really nice back and forth going. I rarely send sketches at that point. If they are, they're so loose, they almost can't be interpreted. Just maybe design kind of aspect, stick figure kind of stuff. Do you do that clients too, Jake?
Clients don't like to be surprised.
Right. mean,
even if it's a good surprise, you know, they money's on the line. Their reputation is on the line, because they have to show this stuff to other people as well. So, yeah, what I do, and specifically, I think this is important, is make sure every one of the images you send is consistently named. So, sketch page number one. Sketch page number 2.jpg, sketch page number 3.jpg. And then on those sketch pages, every individual sketch, put a letter or a number right next to them.
Now, are you talking about the informal kind of process, or on the actual sketch date, what you send?
This is the actual, like, delivering it to the client for feedback.
They're going to
take this into a meeting.
Yeah, we don't like your
and they're going to.
I don't like that. We're going to disagree on this one, which is good.
Okay. I think you're very, very wrong. The reason for this is, and I think maybe what you're thinking, Lee, is I'm thinking more like I'm designing a character for your company's logo or something like that. Yeah. And here's five different variations. Here's one with big ears. Here's one with little ears. What if we did a raccoon instead of a rabbit? You know, and so all those are going to have a little letter next to them. And then in your email, this is what I usually do, is I'll say sketch page number one, drawing A, or I'll just say drawing A, and they could figure out you know, which page that is, and then I'll give my notes on that. Here's why I think this is a good direction, or here's what I think is kind of a bad direction for this one, you know, or some of the struggles you're going to have with this one. And so they can easily see my thoughts for each of these, and they can easily find them on the page that they're looking at. And they're not like, you don't have to say, okay, page one, top left corner or middle, right, the two in the middle, the one on the left of the two in the middle. You don't have to do any of that. You just clearly outline where everything is. And then also on each page, I would put your name and the date in the corner. At the minimum, you can also put contact info, because these files are going to be forwarded to some art director over there. They're going to be forwarded to the marketing team, or they're going to be forwarded to the CEO or whatever. They're going to get passed around, and it just makes it easy for them to see who made this. And if those people specifically need to contact you, they can do that as well. Okay, tear me apart, Lee.
All right, that was terrible advice. No, I'm just kidding. What I'm going to add is I'm just going to add some slight twist to Jake, and I think Jake mm-hmm. will agree with me when I advocate for this. I agree with Jake 100%. Label each drawing. Either it's A or it's 1 or whatever. I mean, I do the same thing with book covers. That's kind of how I present. But all of my work is in a PDF, because I want one file going back and forth to everybody. Mm. And then all of my notes, basically, like, say I'm doing a book cover. So here's how it's presented. The first page shows all three variations, and they're kind of small. It says A, B, and C. So, and it has my logo and has my contact info, everything Jake says, which is really important. Then the next page of the PDF will be, here's option one, and it's blown up. And then there's all kinds of little arrows and saying, okay, this is that tree that's in the story, and this over here is these two characters talking. And basically the whole idea is I'm advocating for myself on what they're going to talk, what they need to talk about when they're in the meeting. And so I put everything on that page, because I don't want them to have to go back to my original email to try to find that. So I just want it to be on the page, because I also assume that some meetings happen by them printing out the PDF. Mm-hmm. And so it's just all on the page. They can spread them out, they can staple it together, but it's always just one file, so they can forward it, and it doesn't get lost.
That's okay. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's the premium option. but I like what Lee's saying, because it does protect you a little bit more. And so I kind of would look at I would just kind of feel out like who you're working with and what's needed. But that's really good advice, to just make a complete pack. It's almost like a deck that you're showcasing what you're doing.
So the benefit of presenting like that, in my opinion, has it like I said, it gives my client ammo for when they go in the meeting and somebody says, well, why don't we add this to the background? And then my page says, here's why the background is left blank.
Yeah.
And so I'm advocating for myself. And so what I noticed is my change orders went way down when I started presenting like this. Hmm. Let me just add this before I forget it. The looser your sketch, I've noticed that the more professional that this presentation is, the looser my sketches can actually be. The same is true for the frame. Like if I'm doing a book cover, I'll make a really nice border for it. You know, I don't try to hand scribble the border, and then the inside sketch can be kind of loose, and it just makes it the whole presentation look total pro. And then, like I said, the change orders that I get most of the time now, it's them saying, hey, go for it. We like number two, go for that one.
Yeah. I think too, like what, after you do your initial emails and you understand a little bit like the structure of, you know, maybe one of the things you ask is, will you be approving everything, or is there a committee that you have to present this to? I would find that out early on in the meeting too, just so you know how to present. If it's, if it's one individual that you're working for, it's like, you know, some of these smaller jobs, it could just be like, hey, I want to hire you to do a commission, you know, something like that. You may not need to go that far for that. It could just be, here's my images, here's an email to go along with it. It's not going to be forwarded to anybody. So that's like the simple version. Lee's is a little bit more professional version, and one that's more for an organization where these images are going to have to pass through several hands. So
the other cool thing about it is, once I started presenting this way, me and David Holm both started doing this at the same time when we shared a studio, and both of us started getting emails back from our client that says, oh, you got to assume your client is getting hundreds of sketches from other illustrators and jobs that they're working on and stuff like that. It's not just you. And so we would get emails back just glowing, like, thank you so much. Like, the sketches look great, but this presentation saves me so much hassle.
Yeah, I like that.
And that was nice.
I like that. Okay, did you have anything you want to add to that, Will?
I just send sketches.
Okay. There you go. All right. So that's initial round. What do you do subsequent round? Is it basically the same thing, just more refined, more refined, more refined?
Yes, but here's one asterisk to that. Whenever there's a change, I always include the original thing that they're asking to be changed, what the things are that I'm going to change, and the new version. And they're right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, that way they're not left wondering what the, because a lot of times they'll make these change orders, or like I said, it's a group of people and they're just firing stuff off. And this way, again, you look like a pro the whole time and you can mm-hmm. say, here's the things I addressed. And if something that is, you know, they want it isn't on there, you're like, it's clear that you didn't know that you're supposed to do it.
This does add a level of complexity in your schedule as well. So if this is going to require you to probably put in another couple extra hours.
Not a couple. You make only once. You make a template or just do it for one job and then that will be your template. So you don't have to actually do it randomly. But so I've just got a template, open it up and there it is. I just replace all the images. I can type whatever I want.
Easy. Very cool. Okay. So I like that. How do you deal with notes when you get notes? Do you push back? Do you just do what they say?
I mean, I really try to understand why they're making the change. I think that's important. Sometimes mm-hmm. I think, sometimes changes you agree with, sometimes you're probably indifferent to them, and sometimes you really don't like the changes. Sometimes I've had changes come back that make the book a lot better. You know, make the illustration better. And so I try to stay really open to that. There was a time in early on when I was always, I would always take offense of like, why do they have to change this? This is great. My work is great. And then I realized I'd seen instances where I looked at the book when it came back and I realized, wow, their changes were better. So in being more humble and being more open-minded, I try to understand why they're making those mm-hmm. changes. One thing that is really frustrating for art directors is if you miss some of the changes, which I've done in the past, mm-hmm. where let's say there's five changes in a sketch and you do two or three or four of them and you forget about one. It's really aggravating for them to have to come back and get you to do the other one. Mm-hmm. It wastes their time. And it's definitely not a feather in your cap for future work. So I would say, don't ignore. If you don't like a change, make sure you have a dialogue about it. And if you have another, and don't ever say, well, I don't like that change without having a solution prepared for mm-hmm. an alternative.
Exactly.
Be solution oriented. But another piece of advice along this line is, when you make changes, if you can't, you have to figure out how to love the changes. This is a tough thing. You have to figure out how to fall in love again, especially if it's something you don't want to do. I find that if I approach it with a positive attitude, I can almost always figure out a way to make it.
Sorry, Will. Hold on, let me cough. I can't find the mute on the Audacity. Is it there somewhere? Is there a mute?
I don't think you need to. They'll
take it out of Audacity.
Well, I still just don't want them to have to worry. If I can just hit a button and save them the time,
No, don't worry about it.
Jeez. All right. Hold on. Go ahead. Sorry.
Where was I?
We were talking about zoo animals. No, I don't know.
So I was saying you really need to be, you need to find that gear where you can get really positive about the changes, because if you hate the changes and you hate the sketch you send, you're going to send a crappier sketch. They're going to approve it. You're going to end up having to paint that. And you're going to hate your life when you're painting that crappy one, and they're not going to like it. And so it's just going to be a blight on whatever project you're working on. Likewise, don't ever send in any sketches that you don't want to paint, because inevitably it feels like that's the one they'll always pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's good advice. Only send them stuff that you're willing to work on. Well,
then you can be excited about painting.
I want to run this by you guys because it's an interesting thing. I started doing it a while back, and I noticed that it sort of works. But I now, in my, like, say I'm doing a book cover and I got three versions, I now write in all my notes, please, please pick this one. I love this one. And here's why I love this one. And so I advocate for myself, like, which one, I mean, even though I'm sending three that I hopefully wouldn't mind doing any of the three, I tell them, this is my favorite and this is why. And almost always, I mean, I think clients are just looking to feel good about what they're doing, and they want you to be, happy, I think too. Mm-hmm. So if they sense that you're excited about it, and typically they'll just let me do it.
That's smart.
I like that. That's cool. Okay. So what do you guys send? How do you send the final work? I'll tell you, me personally, I use Dropbox, and I always make a client folder in my Dropbox, and I have like final files in that Dropbox, and I just always send like links to that. And it's super easy. They click on a link, they can download it. There's no, you know, you don't have to worry about emails not being able to download it or anything like that. You don't have to worry usually about file limits and things like that. Dropbox just seems to work really good for me. And it's just an easy way to organize everything, because I'm already putting things in my files anyway on my computer. And so that's what I'll do. I'll have, and again, this goes back to the original email, like, what are the deliverables? I'll just put all those deliverables in a folder. Everything's like organized in a particular, you know, very understandable way. So JPEGs are in one folder, PSDs are in another folder, you know, any other file types are in another folder, and here's the link, and you know, it's all yours. How do you guys do it?
I use WeTransfer, the free version.
Okay.
I love it. It's super easy. They download it. Remember when there were FTP sites, when we would use the file transfer protocols, and it was like no one ever knew how to do it or if it's sent, and they couldn't find the folder that it was supposed to be in.
The thing I loved about FTP files, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but you could, if you knew what you're doing, you could poke around and see all the other projects that they're working on.
I do that too.
And I just go in there and like, oh, what's this book? Oh, that's cool illustrations. Oh, they're working with this person? Let's see what they're working on, you know?
Yeah, you get the keys to the kingdom when they give you the FTP.
Right.
I'm actually, the book that I'm delivering right now, or that I just finished up on, the picture book, was an FTP. And so that's...
I haven't dealt with FTP in so long. I bet if I asked, though, but like, hey, so what's your FTP for me to upload these to? They'd probably... be like, oh, yeah, here it is. But Dropbox is just so easy.
Yeah, I use Dropbox most of the time.
That was one of those things, too. Early on, I've been using it probably 10 years now. Early on, I was like, geez, I can't believe I'm paying this much a month. Is it really worth it? And now I'm just like, I can't believe it's this cheap.
it's so worth every penny now. I mean, it's like a terabyte for $50 a month or something. I mean, It's
good. You'd think Dropbox was sponsoring this episode. Maybe we should contact them about sponsoring.
I tell you why they're so good is they figured out that with how they work and how it works, they've just figured the whole thing out seamlessly. Kind of like me and Will were talking about the iPad case we have. They figured out the perfect thing right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And so once you have it, it's just something you don't think about. Like, what I like about it is it updates all my files. A client will ask for something and it's already... all I have to do is say, copy a Dropbox link and then I send it to. I don't have to do all this extra uploading and do all this weird stuff. They just sort of figured it out. They made my life easy. It's worth it for sure.
Right. Okay. So what do you guys usually say in your final email to them?
Will's like, holding up the case. So people are going to be asking about that.
Yeah,
what's the case?
Zugu,
what's the
case?
It is the best case you could ever get. We are not sponsored by them in any way or affiliate, but me and Will both have that just independently of each other. And I saw that he had it and I was like, dude, how great is that case? It's perfect.
All right. So what's the, what do you usually say in that final email? Is it,
give me my money.
I always,
okay. So you ask for your money.
You know what?
No, I do ask about a PO and what the final process is. Do they need an invoice mm-hmm. from me? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they will, sometimes they'll ask for, or you'll have to fill out a W-9 sometimes. Mm-hmm. So you'll ask about that process.
Let's just structure this email out for them. Hey, here's the final deliverables. They're all in this folder. Let me just say it was so great to work with you guys. Thanks for hiring me.
Even if it wasn't, do you do that?
Even if, yeah. Well, if you want to work with them again, you say then that.
Yeah.
You say that. If you don't want to work for them.
You can still thank them without saying, hey, let's work together again.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, here's what's funny.
Always be.
You would think that it's obvious. I did. As an illustrator, I'm like, it's obvious that all illustrators want more work. So yeah, it's like obvious that I would want to work for you again. And then I found out, and this was like 5 years in, some of my fellow illustrators were saying, hey, this was so fun working. Please call me again. And I found some of my illustrator friends were working for a client that I had worked for multiple times. And I'm like, how come I'm not working multiple times? And I kind of found out that they invited more work, whereas I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I probably looked like I didn't want to work with them again because everyone else was saying, I want to work with you again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I throw out there even a little addition to that and let them know sort of what I'm interested in, not just that I'm available, but like I'll send it in and say, hey, I'm really looking to build up my book cover work this year. And here's some examples of stuff that I've done. Let me know if any of this kind of stuff comes along. And I kind of, you know, pitch it for whatever I'm trying to do.
That's cool. That's great. That's cool.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. You do a little of the legwork for your agent there.
Yeah, it works.
Might as well. Okay, so professional, polite, you know, extra polite if you want to work with them again. And again, you don't want to burn any bridges. You don't know the situation. If a person's hard to work with, you don't know if that was their fault or if it was the people they work for's fault. And jobs change and people move around and they might be great to work with at another company than they were at that company. So I would just give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, the other thing is Lee mentioned too, like how do you broach the payment thing? Do you just, you say, hey, do you guys need an invoice? Do you need a purchase order? You ask them specifically.
Yeah, is there anything else I need to fill out or to wrap it up?
Okay, cool. And then how do you guys make an invoice?
I highly recommend QuickBooks Self-Employed. I think all illustrators should use QuickBooks Self-Employed for a number of reasons, including that it calculates your quarterly tax payment, which is worth it just by itself. But it's got an invoicing feature that's great.
Cool.
That's great.
And you, Will?
I use Google Docs.
Same here. I use Google Docs and I export a PDF and send them a PDF. And the reason for that is if you're using Google Docs, don't share the link to the document to them because those can be edited and changed. And I have hired people to work for me and I've gotten those documents sent to me, those invoices as documents. And when I've gone back to check them later to check my records, I've found that they've been edited and changed to like a newer version. So I don't have like a, you know, a PDF can't be changed, can't be edited. So
yeah, that's
so send a PDF, title the PDF. I would title it your name and the invoice number, or your name plus the project. And if you're looking for like specifics, like what does a invoice even look like? What kind of information needs to be on it? There's plenty of samples online. Just look for sample invoice and do a version. Just do a version of that. It usually needs to have your contact information on it, the person you're working for's contact information on. Companies love to have an invoice number so they know what to call it. You should like how to refer to it, how to find it, search it. You should keep track of invoices that way too, so that you can, you know, you can just go through and be like, okay, invoice 72 was for this job. And it's just easy to find that way. And then also on your invoice, always put, here's how to pay me. So here's a employer identification number, or here's an address to mail a check to, or here's a PayPal address to send money to. What, you know, just you have to make it as easy on them as possible to get you that money. Last question. And then if you guys have anything else you want to add, be thinking of it now. But this is the last thing. You've delivered everything. You've sent them an email. The client's happy. You're happy. The pay hasn't showed up. It's a month later. Maybe it's 2 months later. I don't know. How do you follow up with that? What do you usually say? What do you usually
do? Before we get into that longer one, let me address the shorter version of that equation. Mm-hmm. Is you've invoiced, you get paid. What do you do with that money? The first thing you do is take 30% and put it in a tax account, because you don't want to get your first year as an illustrator. Say you're moderately to hugely successful, you make money and you haven't put any aside for taxes for the whole year. And I didn't do that for years, and I always got bit in April when all of a sudden mm-hmm. this huge tax bill is due. If you just take 30% of everything, put it into this separate account, so it's not part of your same, you know, regular checking account or whatever, business checking, it takes care of that problem. And so if you get paid...
That's for U.S. residents.
Yeah, U.S. residents. But everybody, you know, worldwide, you just got to adjust it for whatever your tax rate is and all that stuff. But just a lot for how money gets... moved around. I've known some people, especially photographers in their first couple of years, who get like a catalog account and they make $100,000 mm-hmm, and they mm-hmm. don't do that. And then all of a sudden April rolls around and they owe $25,000-$30,000 in tax just mm-hmm. from that one job, not including all the rest of their jobs. And it sinks
that's why
them pretty
there's
quick.
So many, that's why there's so many Kickstarters in March.
Yeah, please gotta pay my tax bill. So just do it, just separate it. It stings a little bit, but as long as you know it's coming, it doesn't sting as bad as it does in April.
That's great advice.
Okay. Yep. And then following up if you haven't gotten paid yet.
Oh man, that's an awkward moment.
So here's the thing. Keep in mind that, you know, it's not the art director's money. It's mm-hmm. it's whoever you're working with. If you're working with an editor, if you're working with an art buyer, if you're working with an art director or creative director, it's not their money. And also, they're usually not the ones screwing up the payment. So when right. you get pissed off, don't get pissed off at the art director or whoever your contact is. Say, hey, this is what I say. Hey, I really hate to bother you. I know you've got more important things to do, and this isn't even in your purview, but I haven't gotten paid. Can you get me the person that I need to email and start that
Perfect.
Chain? And then they'll either do it for you. They'll feel bad and they'll like, cause you didn't attack them.
Yeah. Cause they're embarrassed by it.
Right.
They don't like that.
They'll do it for you or they'll give you that person. And then you mm-hmm. can kind of,
right.
you know, but
what if it's, sort of a one-on-one thing. This isn't a publisher or an official corporation you're working for. It's
tiny company.
It's
tiny
just
individual.
A tiny company. It's one person maybe who's hired you to do something.
Let's role play it. Let's.
Jake, I always give the benefit of the doubt. Okay, go ahead.
You ask me. You're the illustrator, Jake, and I'll be the client.
I'm in charge here. You're the. Okay.
All right,
I'll
You be the client.
Play along,
here's
Jake.
The...
Just play along, Jake. Come on.
Okay, I'll be the client. Just doing my job.
Wow. Just didn't go all right, as I had planned.
Sure love all this free artwork.
If it's just the individual client, then it's not a whole HR and all that stuff. I send him an email saying, hey, maybe this got sent to spam, or I give him some kind of out that doesn't put the responsibility mm-hmm. on them. Not sure if this went through. Just resending it. Let me know if I can... help out anyway. If you have any questions, you know, send it again.
Yeah.
And I'll probably do that two or three times before I start yelling.
I think that's good. Just keep a cool head. Always keep a cool head. After three or four times, then I send them a screenshot of the Instagram post I'm going to do about them and how they haven't paid, and just say, hey, can I get your approval on this before this goes out live?
No. Let me ask you guys a question. Would it be better in that situation? Say it's let's look at a situation that a new illustrator might get. Like maybe it's a self-publishing kind of thing and they're working with them and that person's not paying that final bill. By the way, this is why you get incremental pay along the way. So if they don't pay, at least it's a small amount that you're losing, not the entire job. but say that person won't pay the whole thing. Do you ask if it's kind of becoming clear that they're not going to pay? Do you ask, hey, can we split this? If you're having trouble making the paying the thing, can we split it up into payments or something like that? Do you think that would be?
Okay, here's the problem with that. I love it when Lee walks into a trap. Legally, if you accept a partial payment, you, in a court of law, that can be argued as payment in full, because it becomes a he said. It's not, if it's, especially if it's not in a contractual thing, then mm-hmm. then the client can easily, in a court of law, say we were having a hard time paying. We negotiated with them. They said they'd accept.
I love 500. It when Will walks into a trap, because with this email, if they'd agree to it, then you have to send an addendum to the contract saying we're going to break this final one up.
Yeah, make sure you do
up.
That. Yeah. But in general, if you accept a partial payment and you don't get it in writing that it's partial, it can easily be argued in a court of law, and you'll almost always lose, because the defendant, if you take them to court, will say they agreed to take a lower amount. And then it's just hearsay after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I just want to say congrats on navigating your first job, or your first few jobs here. Again, all of this can be personalized. I would say just take what we've said and use it as a guideline. Assess the situation on your own. Kind of use some of your street smarts and figure out, you know, what's needed in that situation. But I think what we've gone over here is a pretty good like structure for how you want to do these first few jobs. And I think with that, if there's nothing else to add,
There's one more thing. There's one more thing I want to add.
Oh man. Okay.
Sorry. Well, this is a big one, especially when you're early in your career. And I know we talked lightly about revisions, or how we present them, but what happens when a client is asking for too much, like too many rounds? Where do you draw the line, and how do you draw the line there?
That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked it, Lee. And
Let's do it next time.
Really?
You can't leave him just hanging kidding. Like that.
No, go for it, Will. It's what does your book say? And what does your Kickstarter say?
It's really tough, because it's hard to anticipate all of the problems that could arise ahead of time with, and your contract that you send them would be too complicated to even understand if you covered every possible thing that could go wrong. So now you will inevitably find yourself in a place where the client, in your opinion, is being difficult or is asking for too much, and you are in a situation where you finally have to say time out. You know, in general, I give you a round of sketches, you give me changes, I give you those changes, and then there might be a second, even a third round of changes, but not brand new sketches. That's scope creep. So so if they ask for a fire hydrant, a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, and you give them three sketches of different angles of dogs peeing on fire hydrants, and they say, after the second or third round or whatever, they say, you know, we decided not to even have him peeing on the fire hydrant. We want him peeing on a tree.
Yeah. Or now it's a dragon. It's not even a dog.
Yeah. That's not acceptable. That's scope creep. Mm-hmm. But the way to
deal with that real quick is what I always say is I'd be happy to change it to a dragon peeing on something else, peeing on a tree, but I'm going to I'll send you a new contract for that.
A new contract. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, they have to. Yep. Care and feeding of clients is a nuanced approach.
Yeah, you just might say too, like, hey, we're bumping up against you know, what I said I'd be able to do for the amount that you're paying, and we're getting to the kind of the limit of that. So you brought up contract. We didn't actually go over a contract phase and who writes that up and who's in charge of that and how
that's official it has to be. Can of worms right there.
Yeah. I want to say, if it's somebody small and they're like, hey, I just want to commission you to do, you know, a Captain America drawing for my kid's wall. I think your contract is the emails back and forth that you're sending there. and it doesn't have to be as buttoned down as that. And if, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be out a day's work for something like that. If they end up not paying, but you still have a drawing of Captain America that you did that you can go off and do something else with, right? If it's something where you're spending months on it, yes, you're going to need an official contract. That's something that's usually, if you're working with a publisher or some sort of, you know, official corporation, they're going to have a legal team that just sends you a contract, and you're going to want to go over that with either your lawyer or your agent or your uncle who understands contracts or you who understands contracts. And if that's the case, you know, if they go against that contract, then you could say, okay, we need to adjust the contract, and either they do that or, you know, if they're the ones who created the contract in the first place, then I think it's on them to do that. Now there's a gray area in between there where maybe it's not a huge corporation and maybe it's not, you know, you're doing something for, you know, your neighbor down the street. Then I think you can never be too safe, but you can also spend a lot of money trying to be too safe too. You know,
there's a middle ground there. The pricing and ethical guidelines by the AIGA is awesome. And they have boilerplate contracts that are specific to the design industry that I would say that's where you want to be if you don't have contracts yet and your client isn't providing them, or your client, you know, it's a small client and they don't have a legal team either. Use those contracts. They're great because they talk about things specific to illustration that we're talking about, the rights and all that stuff changes and how all that stuff is handled. They do a great job with their contracts.
I would just, this is where you have to like kind of assess your own particular situation and decide, okay, can I write something up that basically outlines what I agreed that we'll do and what they'll agree to pay, and we both agree on that? Can you just say, okay, it's all in the emails, and emails hold up in a court if it ever goes that far. I've never had to take anybody to court. Usually I just, if something falls through, I'm just out the time, but I still have the work that I've made and I can put that in a portfolio or whatever, you know, like if they're not willing to pay, then everything's null and I can do whatever I want with the work that I created. Right. So I think you just have to assess it. And if you're getting paid a lot of money, then maybe it is worth it to hire a lawyer. If the financial side of it justifies the amount paid, you don't want to, if it's a $5,000 job and it's going to be, you know, $4,000 to get a contract made from this lawyer, then maybe that's not a good use of your money. So,
right.
Here we are, three non-lawyers giving legal advice.
have any of you guys ever not been paid?
It took me a year to get paid from a company in England that I worked for one time. And man, it was like clockwork. Every Friday I'd have an alarm that go off that would say, send an invoice. And I just send them an invoice every Friday.
I've never not gotten paid. However, the worst experience I had was this situation. And it was, dude asked me to color a comic book cover for him, and I was like, "Hey, I'm a little busy, but I like your work. I want to work with you. So yes, I'll do it. I'll set aside other stuff so I can work on this." I busted my butt. I worked on it. I delivered it. He came back and said, "You know what? I decided to go a different direction. Thanks anyway. I'm not going to use it." So that was, it's sort of like a lesson learned, I guess. Like, he didn't pay me, but he also didn't use anything that I did for him as well.
Right.
And so I just kind of avoided him and and never, you know, just knew, okay, don't ever work for this guy again.
I've only had one time where I got a half payment and the company was going belly up and they just like, look, take it or leave it. This is the best we can do. So I took it. And it was
that an incremental payment or was
no,
that
it was
the whole thing?
It was a $500 one editorial illustration 28 years ago. and I got 250 instead of 500.
That's not too bad. So I will. I'll go ahead.
Well, the reason that I wanted to ask this is because I didn't want us to send this panic out there that like not getting paid is constantly happening. I know it does happen.
Yeah, it's sometimes you just gotta fight for it a little bit. Sometimes it just gets lost in HR. But I will say that if a client doesn't pay, kind of like we've been saying here, beating around the bush a little bit, is you sort of got to move on with your life. Don't be someone who thinks that you're going to take them to court. It'll wreck your whole life to take them to court and cost way more than almost any job. I mean, if you're doing a $200,000 job for Porsche or something, take them to court.
Take them to Twitter, take them to Facebook. That companies are petrified of that. And I've seen that. And I've seen companies try to scramble to do some damage control and not very well. And you know, crying about how we're hurting for money and stuff, and it's like artists are.
That is like the scorched earth option. Mm-hmm. So that is make sure you resort. Never want to work for them ever again.
I would add the asterisk there. I wouldn't even do it no matter what, because you end up looking another thing. Would another company want to work with you if you just burned a client that you worked with?
Well, but it's how you do it. It's how you do it. Like let's walk this through. Let's say it's a medium-sized or small-sized publisher, and they're trying to work with other illustrators, and you have gone the distance with them, and they're and in this fictitious scenario, they've decided not to answer your emails or phone calls or anything, and they're just ghosting you all of a sudden, and you know what I mean, like
right?
Because this has happened. If you went on Facebook, I think if you went on Facebook and said, "Hey, has anyone had problems with this company?" Chances are, and in the situation I'm thinking of, all of a sudden it started this huge thread of people going, "Oh my gosh, I didn't get paid from them either." And so at that point, I don't think there's much lost. This is
that's
be
true.
Super
if it's
rare.
Done like that, yeah. If it's like that, there was a gallery a long time ago in LA, right when I was graduating, that I had some work at, and they were selling work and then not paying the artists, and that's how it sort of came out.
Mm.
Yeah, but you don't want to get on Twitter and be like, "Hey, HarperCollins, they're 2 weeks late paying me. Nobody worked for HarperCollins. These guys are the worst." Probably not a good idea. All right. Now, can I take us out?
I got a few more things.
Yeah, one more thing.
This is a long one. Wow.
Who's
I wonder
that,
if anybody
who's
stuck
that in the
with
background
us.
Background there, Jake.
That's my assistant helping out. He's actually I need to tell him some things to work on today. So that's why we gotta end this thing.
I saw his Twitter feed that was complaining about you not paying him.
Yeah.
I pay pretty much on time every time. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com. Where becoming a great illustrator starts. And your hosts today have been Will Terry, Lee White, and I'm Jake Parker. Will Terry can be found. Will Terry's artwork can be found at willterry.com and also on Instagram at willterryart. Lee White Illustrations work can be found at leewhiteillustration.com and on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And you can find my work at mrjakeparker.com and on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast produced by Aaron Painter. And you can find his work at painterdraws.com. Podcast edited by Alex Sugg. And you can find his work at alexsugg.com. That's Sugg with two G's, gg.com. And the podcast video, we post these videos on YouTube as well, is edited by Daniel Tu. That's T-U, and it's daniel2.co. And our social media expert for SVS Learn and for this podcast is Lisa Fott. And special thanks to her for doing all that out there. So if you like this episode, please share it around. And we'd actually would love to hear your thoughts about your experience with your first jobs and where we're hitting the mark and where we might be off or where your experiences have been a little bit different. And if you have thoughts like that, go over to the svslearn.com forums where you can... join in on the discussion there. We have a thread specifically for this particular episode. So log on at svslearn.com, free to join, and tell us what you think over there. All right, I think that's it, everybody. Thank you. we will talk to you next time.